Have you slayed the Goliaths in your life? Take these five principles to do so. Maybe you've heard sermons along those lines. Maybe that's instinctively how you look at a passage like this. For many in our culture and in Christianity at large, this is how so many Old Testament passages are read. Dare to be a Daniel. Be like David. Here's a moralistic story, and go and do likewise. Perhaps it's easy, tempting, and great application if we read it that way. But when we read a passage like this, a story like this, as one author said, this is not a metaphor. This is a real enemy. This guy's huge, and he's defied Israel and needs to be dealt with. This is much more than just, well, look at your own life and see what you need to deal with. Especially if we see this as one of those kind of epic stories in the Old Testament. Again, this is one that almost every child knows in and out. And yet, perhaps because it's so well known, we have a lot of misconceptions. Maybe we think of David as this little tiny boy, you know, and he puts Saul's armor on and is just hanging down to the ground. And he's, I can't wear this. You know, we maybe think of all these kinds of pictures from storybook Bibles or Sunday school material or just our own imagination. But as we look at this passage tonight, what I want you to see is what we've been thinking about all along. As we've worked through 1 Samuel, and especially as we've thought about these offices in the Old Testament of the prophet, of the priest, and the king, and as we've thought about Saul as a negative example and picture, and as we've begun to see David as this positive foreshadowing of the great king, that's what we should see here in this passage. God's anointed doing battle against Israel's enemy. And again, this isn't just an everyday man. This is the anointed king. He's the representative, and he's fighting for God's honor and glory. When we nail that down, then we can more clearly make those lines of application, not immediately to us, but first and foremost to the anointed Christ, who takes up his battle against God's enemies and destroys him. In fact, this is exactly what we see going on here, and it's that great story that we see from Genesis all the way through Revelation, the story of the seed of the woman who's come to crush the head of the serpent. Have you ever thought about this story like that? There's actually a lot of details that link up this idea with David crushing this enemy. Where's the stone hit? What gets chopped off? What kind of armor is he wearing? Well, we'll come back to some of those details. Those are just to whet your appetite just a little bit. What we do have here is an inkling, a foreshadowing of God's anointed who would come to crush the head of the serpent. But here we have David enacting that same drama as he crushes and chops off the head of Goliath. Only when we make this first line application to Jesus can we then go on to say, well, what about us? How do we pick up the armor of the Spirit that God gives to us to fight the battles before us? But we may not have time to that. So let's jump in and look at some of these main ideas first tonight. First, I want to look at Israel's enemy. We're introduced extensively to Goliath, and then David, whom we've already seen, gets another introduction. But we'll focus first on Israel's enemy. And then secondly, we'll look at David's intro and consider some of the things that he faces. And then finally, we'll look at the victory. So let's look at Israel's enemy in the first place. Have you ever met someone really, really tall? I mean, like tall, tall. When I was a freshman in high school, probably weighed 125, about as much as Goliath's armor. We played another high school, and on their varsity team was a man who went on to play NBA basketball. And you can imagine, I don't know, maybe 5'5 at that time, looking up at this NBA future, and just thinking, this is crazy. Well, you can imagine this sight on the battlefield in Israel. The lines are drawn. Here's tall, handsome Saul, ready to lead his troops into battle. But out comes strapping giant Goliath, taunting, egging on Israel, defying the enemy or the armies of Israel. You get this picture, don't you? I mean, we've seen Israel face the Philistines before, right? And this is the enemy that Saul's been appointed to fight. And he's appointed because he's tall, he's strapping, and he's going to fight like all the nations fight. Well, the author goes to some lengths to describe for us this enemy. Look at some of the description here of Goliath. Again, this is a real man, a huge enemy. I mentioned basketball. I mean, think about a basketball hoop. This guy's almost as tall as 10 feet, probably 9 feet, 6 inches tall. He doesn't even need to, well, he could just nose it in, right? Stand on his tiptoes and slam dunk contest won. Giant, huge man. And probably not just one of those tall, skinny guys, right? I mean, because he's bearing 125 pounds of armor from head to probably toe. He's ensconced, encased in thick armor. There's like no chinks, right? This is we'd say bulletproof today. Impermeable to any of Israel's onslaught. It's amazing. Not too long ago, we took our children bowling. Have you ever picked up one of those bowling balls? You know, you look for the 8-pound ball, right, for the kids, and then you find one that your hand fit in, and maybe you get one that's a 14 to 16-pound ball, right? Well, think about that size. Now, put that on the end of a spear and try to throw that. That's Goliath's spear. Some 15-pound spearhead, just the spearhead itself. He's a war machine in himself, and he's very effective. For 40 days, I mean, there's a biblical number if there ever was one, right? Everything always happens after 40 days. 40 days, he's taunting the army of Israel. All the men are there, gathered, and Goliath's with this probably booming voice, shouting above all the crowds, taunting. Send me a man to fight. You can almost hear it in your mind's ear, can't you? Well, and then we're introduced to David. You know what? I'm going to pause there just one second, because there's something to draw out here. As you have this huge figure, hulking giant, ensconced in scaly armor. You know, it says chainmail or, you know, mail, but really the picture is of scales. Scale armor like a snake. I hinted at that before, that this is a picture of the seed of the woman doing battle against the seed of the serpent. I read a fascinating book recently that kind of traces these themes out, and here's one of those instances where we might see a picture of this serpent, as it were, or at least a representative of the enemies of God and of his people rearing its ugly head, defying God and his people. That's actually a major theme in this chapter. Thankfully, most of the time I think it comes up, it's translated similarly. Defy, defy, defy. Goliath is defying God. He's defying the armies of Israel. But David's not going to let that stand. Let's look in the second place then at David. Goliath gets this big, long intro. But then to do justice, maybe to mount this escalating drama, David, whom we've already been introduced to, gets another introduction. Last week, we saw him introduced first as this shepherd boy. Remember, Samuel went to go anoint one of Jesse's sons, and all of them parade along through, and he gets to the end of the line and says, "Are there any more? Anybody else?" "Oh, yeah, he's just watching the sheep. He's just, you know, in the sheepfold." So David's first introduction is that of a shepherd boy. And yet he is the one who's anointed, and he becomes the one who is taken from tending sheep to shepherding the people of God. And then in the second place, we saw another intro as this kind of music therapist, as it were, hinting at the reality that he would become the great singer of Israel, who would lead Israel in song and in worship and in prayer, even passing along to us, even as we sang tonight, the Psalms, the praise book of the church. Well, now we have a third intro. Remember Saul? When he was introduced, he had a couple of these, maybe three-part intros. Now David also has a three-part intro. And he's going to be confirmed as that warrior king. Well, as he comes on the scene, he's really just a messenger boy. It's just an everyday day in the life of David. Dad comes, "Hey, son, got a job for you today. Bring these provisions to the war. You know, your older brothers are there. They're probably starving. We got to keep them fed. Got to support the war effort." You know, so old Jesse sends these provisions with the hand of David to the battle lines. You know, it's not like wars had or armies had, you know, their own cooks and chefs and food supply, right? The people had to provide for that. So Jesse sends this food, especially to his sons and to the commanders. And David probably starts early, early in the morning, travels probably some 13 to 15 miles, a good half marathon, down from the hill country of Bethlehem, down to the valley, to the Shephelah. It's kind of like this, if you think about the coastline, right? You've got the coastal plain and then the initial foothills. It's probably somewhere in there. And then you get the higher hills where David lives. He goes down, at least it's a downhill run. And he brings these provisions in, leaves them in the hands of the keeper, and he hears the taunt of Goliath. As it had been for many days, David hears him, comes up, shouting the war cry. And so David asks, what's going to be done for the man who kills Goliath? And they tell him, probably no taxes for his father's house. He's going to be enriched and the king's daughter. That's a sweet deal, if there ever was one. But here we have an obstacle. David's brother, Eliab, is on the scene. Now, remember how Eliab was described in the first place during this anointing ceremony? Samuel sees him, and he's kind of awestruck. Surely this is the one. What did God say? Don't look on the appearances or on his height. Remember, he was kind of like the mirror image of Saul. Well, now he plays a mirror again, but not of Saul, but of Goliath. As he taunts his little brother, he's foreshadowing exactly what Goliath will do as he taunts David in just a little while. And Eliab may be angry that his little scrappy little brother is anointed king, says, "Why have you come down? With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption and the evil of your heart. you've just come down to see the battle. You can almost hear that. Older brother mocking, scorning the little brother. And because the narrator's told us, no, his heart is good. He's got the heart after God's own heart. And then we hear David kind of retort, it's just a word. What have I done now? The exasperation. One author said, there's actually three Goliaths that David asked to fight in this. Goliath, Eliab, and Saul. Well, let's look at Saul for a minute, too. David can't stand that the God of Israel and Israel's armies are being defied by this uncircumcised Philistine. Remember who spoke like that? Jonathan, right? He's the one who called God's enemies the uncircumcised folks. This is a little cue, a little clue to who Israel's enemies are. And so David is brought before Saul, and there's this fascinating interchange. Again, Saul's the king like the nations. He's tall, he's supposed to lead the people in Israel, but he's met more than his match. As tall as he is, Goliath's still a giant. And so he's not led his people into battle, just like he's not led them before. But this is interesting because now we know that the Spirit has left Saul. And so he's even less equipped to go into battle. So David speaks with him. We pick it up in verse 31. In that section, David says to Saul, verse 32, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine. You're but a youth, and this guy's been fighting since he was a youth. But David said to Saul, and you get this, again, this shepherd imagery, right? Each of these three vignettes of David's life, these introductions, are based still, again, in his shepherding capacity. And you can imagine there, in the Bethlehem fields, fighting off these bears and lions who would come to steal his father's sheep. With that staff, with that sling, doing battle against these wild beasts who would come to attack and to devour. And David would not lose one. Well, we would say that in retrospect, as he points us forward to Jesus, right? Not one should perish. Not one would be lost from his hand. Well, David, as this shepherd, proves himself to be a valiant warrior, fighting not against man, but against beasts, and ferocious ones at that, and we might say hand-to-hand combat, or at least hand-to-paw, if we want. And actually, it's this language. It's the bear's paw, the lion's paw, and the paw of this giant. And he says, the Lord... Verse 37, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So what we see here is David, not dependent on his own strength or cunning or squirrely fighting nature or whatever it might be. But he recognizes right from the start that it's the Lord. The Lord who delivered me. Is the Lord who will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. David's learned the lesson of faith. He can look back at his own history of the Lord's dealing with him, preserving him. Say, as he's preserved me in the past, so he'll preserve me today. But Saul has a different mindset. Saul, like the nations, wants to go head-to-head, toe-to-toe, whatever you want to say. Playing Goliath at his own game. And so he tries to dress David with his armor. And this is where we find kind of interesting. You know, we might think in our mind's eye, well, David's a youth, so maybe he's shorty, and the armor just doesn't fit him. That's actually not the picture that we get. I mean, Saul would, I mean, he's not that much of a dummy that he's going to try to fit David with something way too big. But David simply says, you know, I've not tested them. Most soldiers actually didn't have armor, so he's not used to fighting in this. It's not going to do him any good. It's not going to help him. And so David goes to battle with what he's used to, his sling and his staff. These are the shepherd's tools. This is what he's fought the beasts with, and this is what he's going to fight this giant with. His sling in his hand, these rocks from the brook. Maybe here's another thing we need to clarify. You know, we think maybe these little slingshots, right? You need a little small enough stone in your hand that you can pinch it between that leather pouch, right? This is our version of the slingshot, draw back. No, this is a different kind of slingshot. These are two long straps with a large pouch that they swing around like this. And so these stones are probably like tennis ball size. Like, these are good-sized stones. They'll do some real damage. And it's these that David picks up and with these shepherd's implements, steps up to the battle. And as he steps up, we have this interchange. Both of these main characters have been introduced, right? Goliath, this war machine in himself. David with this shepherd pedigree. Not much of a match, according to the world's standards. What's he going to do against this giant? You know, he's going to get crushed. But it gets worse because now they get to speak. And they're fighting words. Goliath speaks first. Verse 41, and the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, kind of like Eliab, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And he said to David, am I a dog that you come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Kind of sounds like Genesis language, doesn't it? Well, that's Goliath's fighting words. But Goliath doesn't get the last word. Now David, who speaks and always speaks theologically, from the first time he speaks in this chapter, all the way through, he speaks to defend God, to speak of the living God, to proclaim the glory of God, even in his evangelistic pronouncements. Verse 45, then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword or spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. Do you see how David goes into this battle? It's not in his own wisdom. It's not in his own strength. It's not even in his own experience. But he goes in the strength of the Lord. Remember last week we saw the Spirit of God rushed upon him from that day forward. And here, both in his speech and in his courage and his willingness to face the enemy of God, he goes into battle as God's anointed to fight against God's enemies. This is really remarkable, isn't it? that we have to really look at this and understand these pictures painted for us with these beautiful words as pointing us forward to the Lord Jesus Christ. We have King David anointed, prepared to do battle, to defend the honor and the glory of God. And so Jesus comes, the anointed, the Messiah, the King of Israel, to do battle against all kinds of these similar enemies. Remember the demoniac? Just break the chains. Nobody could constrain him. Similar kind of figure. Well, this brings us to our last point, the victory. And we'll go pretty quick on this one. So, after all this, pretty elaborate, the battle plans are laid, the field is set, great descriptions of both Goliath and David and the interplay between all these different characters. And the battle's done in four verses. It's really quick. Verse 48, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, slung it, struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. David prevailed, chopped off his head with his own sword. I mean, that's about it. Victory is won. Let me draw a couple things out of there. Do you remember who else fell on their face? And who else head was chopped off in the story of Samuel so far? God's enemies, Dagon. Remember the Ark of the Lord was brought into Dagon's temple? And the first time, the whole statue fell down, right? And they propped him back up. And then the next time, Dagon fell down again, and Dagon's head came off. Well, now it's not Dagon, but now it's one who would worship Dagon. There's always that theme in Israel's, or in the scriptures, right? That those who worship idols become like them. I forget who I heard that from in this context, but it's so true. It's so beautiful that here we have a kind of a replay of the victory of God and of his warrior king. That those who stand against the Lord, the God of the heavenly armies, will fall before him and get their heads chopped off. Well, we see David victorious. We see this, the rest of this play out. The Philistines scatter. David takes the head, and we don't know why yet he brings it to Jerusalem. Maybe he's plotting, scheming already to make that his capital. Because it wasn't even an Israelite city yet at this point. But there goes Goliath's head. And David takes Goliath's possessions and puts them, we don't know if it's in his own tent or in Goliath's tent, and then takes Goliath's tent. Anyway, you get the idea. The war has been won. Bodies are strewn everywhere. The Philistines scatter. And David gains notoriety. Saul's asking about who his father is. What a story, huh? Now you can see why it's a little bit foolish to ask people or encourage people to slay the Goliaths in their life. Especially when you see this story in the great narrative of scriptures as the one representing the seed of the serpent, that scaly imagery of one who would come against God, who would defy the living God, and God's anointed waged war against him and won victoriously. You think about Adam in the garden, how he failed so miserably. Several years ago, I was teaching a high school class about what Adam should have done. And I said something like, Adam should have chopped the head off that serpent rather than let him, you know, tempt Eve in the garden. Well, we see another picture, another representative David, now the anointed king of Israel, chop the head off of Israel's enemy. And yet even this is just a prefiguring of Christ's work on the cross, where he would crush the head of the serpent, though his own heel be bruised. Only in light of that, in that grand narrative, then we can say, okay, what about us? And it's kind of along the same lines that we've been seeing. Christ has won the victory, and so we take up the armies given to us, and we fight. But we fight in his strength and in his power, and in using the weapons that he's given to us, not the worldly weapons, but prayer and the word and faith and these kinds of weapons that we've seen again and again. Well, there's a lot more we could say about this passage. But what I hope you see is that it's just one more iteration of this great story of God's anointed going to do battle against the enemy of God and coming out victorious. As fearful, as filled with dread as Israel was, they that day won the victory. Because one who stood in their place waged war for the honor of God. That his name would be magnified in all the earth. That all the people would know that there's a God in Israel. Think about that when Christ rose from the dead. And what we've been seeing in Acts as the word spread throughout the whole world, that the whole world would see that the God of Jesus lives. And he has conquered not just Satan, but sin and death and the grave. Amen.